Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and Aaron Newcomb. Episode 134 for September 8th, 2010. Sugar Labs. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show with free, libre, open source software every week. I am your host, Randall Schwartz. I bring your show to you every week. We talk to some of the big people, the little people, the movers, the shakers, the projects you might not have heard of, the projects you've heard of way too much. But I love to bring those to you. That's what I do. And what I typically also do is I have a co-host. And just like every week, I've got a co-host this week. You've heard him here before. He's been interviewed here before as a guest, but we're bringing him back again as a co-host. Hello, it's Aaron Newcomb. Welcome, Aaron.
Hey, Randall. Glad to be back.
Very cool. Thank you for joining me in today's show. We have a really special show lined up today. I mean, I'm starting to say that every time, but, you know, sometimes we do actually have a really special show. That's like Jay Leno says, every night's a special show. But anyway, whatever. It's a great show tonight. It's a great show today, actually, or whenever you're listening to this. We have none other than Walter Bender. Walter Bender is with the Sugar Labs project. But Sugar Labs is the current caretaker of the Sugar, it's not really an operating system, but the Sugar interface. Sugar was originally developed for the One Laptop Per Child, OLPC X01, that you may have heard of, the project to try to get laptops into the hands of developing countries. But what they've decided to do is fork off this operating system and release it so that it can be run on anybody's PC, anybody's commodity hardware. And I'm really excited to be looking forward to talking to this guy about what Sugar is actually all about, how we can get participating with it, and what kind of activities are involved with that. You might remember the OLPC because I actually interviewed Brian Berry back for Floss Weekly number 66, twit.tv/floss66. You can get that download back in May of 2009. And he was talking about how he was using the One Laptop Per Child and the Open Learning Exchange in Nepal. It was a very cool show. I was actually speaking to him from Nepal. So great show. If you want to go back and review that before you listen to the rest of this show, that's perfectly fine with us. We just pause the tape and go back. But I'm really excited to be getting him on. I also demonstrated the eToys, which is the squeak-related activity on the OLPC on the Lab with Leo a couple years ago. Also a lot of fun. But before we bring the guest on, I actually also want to say that I know last week and the week before, I talked about this new podcast that I've been narrating for called Starship Sofa. And Starship Sofa was nominated for a Hugo Award. This is an award that's given out to the best of the best in the science fiction community. And they actually won last week. So I'm really excited about that, that I now am narrating science fiction stories for a Hugo Award winning podcast, the very first. So I'm that's a lot of fun. StarshipSofa.com. Go over there and check it out. Any opening other words, Aaron, before we bring on our guest?
No, congratulations on the Hugo, but I am really excited to talk to Walter. I haven't looked at Sugar for a few years, so I'm really anxious to see what's been going on with the Sugar interface and operating system.
So let's go ahead and get Walter on the line. Hello, Walter.
Hi, how you doing today?
Doing well. Where are we speaking to you from?
I'm in Cambridge, Massachusetts.
Oh, very good. Very good. I've actually been there a couple of times. The publisher, O'Reilly, has a big set of offices there, so I kind of know roughly what it is. Yes. So I spend a little bit of time in the opening of the show talking about what Sugar Labs is all about and also a little bit about my history with the OLPC. But, of course, I gave just a summary version of that. Do you want to give us a little bit more detail so we can get the show started?
Sure. So Sugar is the software that runs on the One Laptop Per Child computers. We started the project as part of One Laptop Per Child about 4 years ago. And then 2 years ago, we spun out and set up a new program, a new foundation under the umbrella of the Software Freedom Conservancy. And so we sort of spun the software out and made it available not just to the OLPC hardware, but to any computer. So if it can run Linux, it can run Sugar.
That's really cool. And so describe how Sugar gets used. What's it about?
Well, Sugar, it's a learning platform. It's a free software that's geared towards children from 6 to 16 in all aspects of their learning. It's being used by about 2 million kids around the world every day in school. It's also being used outside of school in informal settings, and it's great. It's lots of fun. It's learning through doing, and it's very much in the spirit of free software.
Now, there's a lot of learning software out there, a lot of classroom software these days. I mean, that's actually a pretty big business, I presume. So what makes Sugar different?
Well, I mean, one thing that makes Sugar different is it's free.
Yeah.
Free as in freedom. But really what makes it different is it's not just an application. It's not just a word processor for kids or a web browser for kids or a math program for kids. It's a platform. It really is a whole environment. And that environment offers a lot of different affordances or utilities that really impact the learning in a positive way. So I can rattle off a few. One of them is that in Sugar, we have this concept called the journal. And with the journal, we record everything the child does, and we automatically build for the child a portfolio of their learning experience. So everything you do is automatically saved. There's no save button in Sugar. I don't know why there's a save button in any application these days, but we got rid of save and just automatically save for you. But it's not just that we're saving your work. We're giving you your work in a form that allows you to be reflective about what you've done. Because learning is not just making things and studying things. It's also being reflective about what you've learned. And then you use your journal to make presentations of your work, sort of like putting your work up on the wall during studio art class. But we do that for math, we do that for science, we do everything in Sugar.
Now, is that happening, is that actually shared between machines, or do I have to have somebody come to my machine to see what I've done?
Well, you have your journal on your machine, but you can share any item in your journal with any other Sugar user. It's one mouse click away. Another thing we did with Sugar is we've got this this model of collaboration. Because learning is not something you do just by yourself. In fact, it's only in school that collaboration is called cheating. In the rest of life, it's called being smart.
Yeah.
And so we put an emphasis on collaboration. And, right now, anybody could go to the internet, go to Google Docs, make a document, figure out somehow how to share that document and collaborate on writing. Mm-hmm. It's a multi-step process. It requires a reasonably robust internet connection to actually make it be useful. With Sugar, you have the same experience, but it's just one mouse click, and it happens through an ad hoc mode, so you don't need the internet to do it. So I can invite you to work with me on anything I'm doing in Sugar with one mouse click, anytime.
Does that mean I'm actually seeing your screen or seeing some sort of shared view of the document?
No. We're doing a shared view. If it's a document or the web browser or a programming environment, each application exploits the sharing in a different way, in a way that's appropriate. So, for example, if I'm using the video capture tool, I can share the pictures I'm taking with you sort of like instant Flickr. If I'm using the web browser, it's like being in Delicious. When I bookmark something, you get the bookmark at the same time. If I'm in the word processor, we're just typing together. If I'm programming using Turtle Art, using a graphical logo environment, then we're sharing turtles. My turtle draws on your screen, your turtle draws on my screen. So each activity has a different way of sharing.
That's pretty innovative, I think, actually. Is there any commercial software doing that?
Well, this was completely new when we started it, when we did it. There's a company called Collabra out of the UK that is took a lot of the ideas that we actually worked with them when we put the Sugar collaboration together. And Collabra then took a lot of those ideas and made them be more robust and more generalized for Linux. They're just beginning to get exploited in other types of activities. But I think it's a great new direction for the communities as a whole, and it's a vital direction for learning. Because, again, learning is something you do with others.
So not only has this project been interesting in the sense of trying to get this type of software into the hands of as many people, especially developing countries, as possible, you're also talking about having some pretty heavy innovation. Is that because it's an open source project that we can get away with some of that?
Well, certainly the open source nature helps a lot because, as we come up with ideas, those ideas can get picked up by other projects. Our goal is to maintain as little code at Sugar Labs as possible. So when Calabra takes the telephony stack they built for us and generalizes it, we don't maintain it anymore. Hurrah. We can focus on the things we really care about, which is learning. So certainly free software makes a big difference in terms of our ability to build and maintain the tools we have. But it also actually plays another role, a somewhat unexpected role, but actually equally important role in our project. Mm-hmm. Let me go into this
detail.
For a second. So one of the things we get from free software is the idea of sharing. And again, I can't emphasize the degree to which sharing is important to learning and collaboration is important to learning. But there's another thing that we'll get from free software as well, and that is a culture of criticism. In free software, you know, the mantra is show me the code. Don't tell me about your idea. Show me. Where's the patch? And we try to focus the learning experience on again, the children not just sitting back, being passive receivers of ideas, but having them actively critique the ideas, make things, make mistakes, try their own thing. So there's a lot of the culture of doing and the culture of critique in Sugar that we think we get that from the culture of free software, but we think it makes a huge impact on the learning.
So you actually get it at both levels then. So sort of the meta issue, the fact that you're building with open source software sort of leaks down into what people are actually end up doing with it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. In fact, another innovation that we put into Sugar is this concept called View Source. We stole it from the web browser. Every web browser has a View Source menu item. And I've long argued that the reason why that particular protocol took off, the protocol of Berners-Lee and Andreessen, took off was because of the View Source in the browser, because it made for the first time an open medium that anybody could look at a document, see how it was built, and make their own. Well, we've done that with Sugar across the board. Every single Sugar activity in Sugar itself has View Source. So again, one mouse click, the kids looking at the source code of the program they're running. And this is not just a sort of an academic or theoretical exercise. We're seeing teachers submitting patches. So this really is having a real impact on the way that teachers and children engage in learning. They're owning the problem. And again, from my perspective, if the teachers are submitting the patches, I don't have to.
So that's really amazing. That's really amazing, because I know that I was going to ask actually along a line of questions there. I mean, I can imagine coming into an education field today, trying to figure out first how to interest kids in an MTV world or post MTV world about, you know, having to, you know, flash and sizzle so that people can stay engaged, but also the pure amount of having to configure software and get things to work together and figure out how to get things that are based on my curriculum that makes sense and still provide a teaching environment. And so along that line, are teachers warming up to the ways they have to customize this stuff for their curriculum?
Yeah, I mean, it's a long road, and not every teacher is using Sugar in the way that we envision it or hope for it. You know, when I was a kid, we had educational technology. It was called the mimeograph machine. Uh-huh. And the mimeograph machine, I can still smell the ink. It was that purple stencil copying machine. And the really, you know, the teachers who knew about technology were really good at cranking out worksheets. That was technology. And if you think about it, you can use the computer, you can use Sugar, you can use any software tool to crank out worksheets. Mm-hmm. And it's mind-numbing. It's sort of built on the model of learning as being the teacher has these knowledge objects. The job of the student is to collect as many as they can. When they've stuffed their pockets and maybe stuffed a few in their ears, you know, then they're considered educated. But we know that that's not what education and what learning's all about. Learning's about appropriating the knowledge, putting it to use. So there's a transition. There's a culture of the classroom that has to change. And again, that's one of the reasons why free software is important, is because free software is impacting the culture of the classroom. The teacher is becoming much more of a mentor, of a guide, as opposed to the one that's creating all the lesson plans and sort of, you know, directing the students. Students are much more proactive, and the students are being creative with Sugar. They're being creative with the software.
I know that as an instructor myself, one of the things I'm constantly facing when I'm looking at how do I webify or how do I interactify my Learning Perl books and my Learning Perl courses is it really is that transition that you're talking about where I have to figure out how to go from I have knowledge up here and I'm trying to squish it in your heads versus now you're going to be interacting with something on your own and I'm not necessarily going to be around to answer the question in real time or even necessarily quickly. How do we change that? So are educators getting a different sort of education about how to be educators today, or are we still sort of trailing on that?
Well, it really depends on the place. So, for example, go to a country like Peru, and we've got a big program in Peru. They're really working very, very closely with the teachers to introduce these new ideas about learning. And then you go to, you know, some other places that are doing one laptop per child, even in the United States, and it's not necessarily happening that way. So it really depends on the approach that the people doing the deployment are taking in terms of how they present this to the teachers, what sort of training they give to the teachers, what sort of preparation, and then what sort of latitude are the teachers given within the classroom. A lot of the interesting stuff's happening in an informal setting outside of the classroom initially, and then it sort of spills back over into the classroom. Sugar. Let me talk about this a slightly different way in terms of our approach. With Sugar, we're pretty passionate about this notion of learn through doing, and we're passionate about this idea of collaboration and critique. But we can't force that down the teacher's throat. We can't force it down the kid's throat. So all we can do is we can design the interface such that the easy path, the most natural path to take, is one that's going to embrace this kind of collaboration. So simple example. I can give you a book as a PDF, and you can read it. Mm-hmm. Or I can give you that same book as a wiki, and you can read it. But the wiki makes it really easy for you to annotate, share your comments with other people, all these things we encourage. So simply by the choice of format, we're going to encourage or enable certain types of behaviors that might not be so easy to do if we chose a different format. So a lot of the decision making in terms of the design of Sugar had to do with how do we make a representation that's going to encourage children and teachers to engage. So it's really about making sure that we're building the right tools for engagement.
Walter, this is Aaron. I'm just wondering, I hate to break up this conversation because it's so interesting on education and open source, but I'm kind of wondering, how did you get started in this? Is this something that you've been involved with from the beginning, or did you kind of work your way into the project midstream? How long have you been involved with the project?
40 years. It's an old project in the sense that, I'm not kidding. No, I haven't been involved. I've only been involved for 30 years, but the project started, Seymour Papert, a colleague of mine who was one of the co-founders of One Laptop Per Child with me and Nicholas Negroponte, started looking at technology and learning back in the early 1960s. And he and his colleagues, Cynthia Solomon and the like, invented the Logo language for programming for kids in the mid-60s. Alan Kay got involved around 1968. He invented the concept of the Dynabook and the personal computer at that time with technology and learning in mind. We, did one pilot project after another, one experiment after another for 30 years at MIT. And then in in 2005, Negroponte and I and Seymour took a leave from MIT to start One Laptop Per Child. And we took all these ideas we've been working on, and that became the genesis of Sugar.
Wow.
We got a lot of help.
Sure. I had no idea that this went back that far. I guess I didn't do enough homework on this one because I thought that this was, my exposure to Sugar has been the One Laptop Per Child. And just before it was the first version was released, I played with the operating system. I downloaded it and played with it. I said, oh, Sugar. Okay. I showed my kids, they clicked around. But I had no idea that this went back that far.
Well, the pedagogical theories go back that far. Sugar itself, I mean, we didn't start writing the code for sugar until, 2000, began in 2005, 2006.
Sure.
We got a lot of help from Red Hat, and we've gotten a ton of help from the community ever since. So, sugar itself is relatively new, but all the ideas behind sugar are well-established, well-grounded in pedagogy.
Wow, that's great. And since we brought up one laptop per child, I mean, what's the current status? Is sugar still used in one laptop per child, or is it an option? How is that working out?
Well, the most recent versions of the software for one laptop per child are dual boot, in the sense that you can either boot into you can switch back and forth between sugar and the standard GNOME desktop. So we wanted to give the children an opportunity to go from the learning tools and migrate into the powerful production tools of Linux, of GNU Linux. So we built this sort of migration path for the children into the version that's put onto Sugar. Oh, no, there's my phone ringing. I apologize for that. Let me see if I can... Well, it is what it is. Sorry. Anyway, the idea, there was a rumor started by one laptop per child that they were going to be switching to Windows, but in fact that never happened. Every single laptop ever shipped by one laptop per child is running Sugar.
Oh, good. That was going to be my next question, because I had heard that rumor and I just assumed that was what it was. I thought that was going forward. They were going to Windows, so that's good. Thanks for clearing that up.
Yeah, no, Windows just never made sense for that hardware, and Windows doesn't make sense for kids and learning.
Right. Without adding special proprietary software on top of it, right? I mean, you got to do a lot of work to get it to the point where kids can use it as efficiently. I know, at least from my experience, having my kids use it, they were able to pick up Sugar and play with it. Even my 3-year-old was able to pick it up and play with it almost immediately.
Well, part of it is the efficiency, but there's other things going on as well. Kids, the hole in the wall project demonstrated that kids can learn how to use anything, including Windows. But it's not just a matter of learning how to use a computer; it's learning how to use a computer for learning, and that's where Windows falls short. It's because with Sugar, all the emphasis, all the decisions are, how does this impact the learning that's going to go on with these kids? How does this engage them more deeply? How does this get them to, bump up against powerful ideas? And again, free software is fundamental to it. I mentioned her earlier, Cynthia Solomon, she worked with Logo, again, since the 1960s. She had an insight, which is that debugging is one of the great learning opportunities of the 20th century. Engaging kids in debugging, because debugging a computer is a nice, safe place to engage in problem solving. And that's what we want kids to learn how to do. We want them to learn how to be problem solvers. So we want them programming. And if you are dealing with a black box, if it's a proprietary environment, you can't do that. And so, again, that's why ViewSource is so fundamental to Sugar. We want the kids to be able to see how things work, break things, fix things. That's where you learn. You learn through doing. You learn through an authentic problem, a real problem you're passionate about trying to solve. And Sugar brings those kinds of things, to the child in a way that a proprietary system can't.
Right, exactly. It's exactly the reason that I try to teach my kids or help them in projects where they have to actually create something. My son wanted to make a hovercraft, for example. I said, well, let's go make one. Let's just go do it. And you can learn what works and what doesn't. I made him do some research. He went and did it. And then we made something that kind of worked, and it was a lot of fun. And he'll always remember that. It sounds like it's, very much the same kind of approach with Sugar. Do you have an idea how much? Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I ask a lot of engineers, think about a great learning moment in your life. And every single one of them, I was trying to solve a problem I was passionate about. And I was looking at pulling in these resources and those resources and asking this question and trying that and failing and trying this. And, we all know what that's like. We know what a great experience that is. And then I asked them, okay, now let's design tools for learning. And they all think back to doing worksheets, and they design worksheets instead of thinking about what is a real learning experience. And so, again, with Sugar, we tried to, you know, break that cycle.
Right.
Learning is doing. Learning is debugging.
Right. Well, do you have any idea how widespread Sugar is at this point? Do you have any idea how many students or how many teachers are using it?
I know that OLPC has shipped almost 2 million laptops. So there are almost 2 million kids using Sugar on the OLPC. But we also have Sugar, again, it'll run essentially on any computer. I've done a pilot in the Boston Public School where they had a computer lab where the computers barely ran Windows 2000. And yet you plug in Sugar and it's like having a new computer. And because GNU Linux is so much more efficient, so much more lightweight, and Sugar is designed to be a very lightweight system. We one of the things we embarked upon a couple of years ago now is a live USB version of Sugar. In fact, I have a little, this is another prop. Let me see, get in front of the camera. Mm-hmm. There we go. That's Sugar on a Stick. Sugar on a Stick is a Fedora project. And it's great. You download Sugar onto a USB key, plug it into any computer, turn it on, you've got Sugar. All your data, your journal I described earlier, is saved on the USB key. You go to another computer, you know, you're moving your data around, you're moving your Sugar experience around with you. And, you know, a lot of people are picking up on that idea. They can give their kids Sugar without having to give them a dedicated laptop. And so I don't know hard numbers yet on Sugar on a Stick, but there's a lot of Sugar out there, and it's a growing community.
Was there a sense then, even early on, that eventually Sugar would be moved off the OLPC and onto other platforms?
Yeah, I mean, right from the beginning, you know, we were honest with ourselves about one laptop per child, that we were starting a movement. And we invented, arguably the first netbook computer. But we knew that to be successful, other people were going to get in the game. And so what we wanted to do was not just get computers to kids, we wanted to get a great learning experience to kids. So from the very beginning, we had in mind that the software we were writing was going to spread to other environments, to other users, other communities, other hardware.
Now,
and again, that's another reason to go free software.
That Sugar on a Stick that you're talking about, does that hold the user's data as well? I mean, is his documents, his journal also on that?
Yeah. It's the operating system, it's Sugar, and the user's documents, everything.
So I don't have to have a dedicated piece of hardware sitting in front of me. I can actually just be an array of commodity PCs sitting there that I would, as a student, come in the morning and just plug into whatever one happened to be free.
Right, and then if you went home or you were at grandmother's house and she had a computer, plug it in and you're using your same Sugar environment. So it means that the teacher, even though the teacher can't guarantee that every kid's got the same computer at home, she can guarantee that they have the same learning environment at home because they all have Sugar on a Stick. So really, it's liberating in many senses in terms of how you use computing.
That sounds
Sugar
incredible.
Runs inside a VM. It runs inside of an appliance. It runs as on a terminal server environment. And again, because we're building it on top of GNU Linux, and GNU Linux does all the stuff already, so we win.
That's very cool. Very cool. I actually tried to download the Sugar thing last night, and when I was preparing for this show, and I tried to run it with VirtualBox. It came up with a blank screen, and it never finished rebooting. I'm hoping that the instructions get a little bit better, because if somebody like me can't figure out how to do it, I probably need some help somewhere.
Yeah, no, the Sugar on the Stick stuff is still not quite ready for prime time, and in particular, the documentation is not what it needs to be. Works really well just as an alternative boot. So if you plug it in and tell your computer to boot off the USB or an SD card instead of off the hard disk, that's a more reliable way of getting it to work.
Yeah, that was the next step, but I was trying to get a bunch of other stuff done last night too. Let's talk a little bit about the software itself. It's what's the implementation language? What's the architecture? Is there a lot of spin-up knowledge to be able to make modifications or patches?
Well, let me answer your last question first, which is to say, last summer we put a physics activity up on our download site. We've got a download site that's sort of modeled after the Mozilla add-on site. Mm-hmm. Where you can download hundreds of additional activities to your Sugar environment. We're using a Gitoria server, so all our backend is all Git. And we had put up a new application, this physics environment, and within 24 hours of our putting this up, a teacher in Australia posted a patch. Mm. So I would say we've got a reasonably easy environment to get going in. I mean, it's not as good as it's going to be or needs to be, but we've made a lot of progress there. Now, you know, you're a Perl guy. We did Sugar and Python.
It's okay.
John Orwan used to be my student, but, you know, what can I say? So most of Sugar's in Python. There are some activities that are written in Smalltalk, actually.
There we go.
We even have a fourth environment on the old PC. But Sugar Core is definitely Python, and most Sugar activities are written with a Python API. And mm-hmm. we've got a series of modules that help you with things like the Sugar toolbars, help you with the journal, help you with the collaboration, so that you just sort of glue in this module and you've got all that. We've also got Sugar implementations of popular engines like Pygame. There are a lot of games written for Sugar that take advantage of that. We have a wrapper, so you can very rapidly get any new Linux application up and running inside of Sugar, inside of a wrapper, a Sugar wrapper. But you know, you really want to take advantage of the journal. You really want to take advantage of the collaboration. So we encourage people to go a little bit deeper than that. But you can get going pretty quickly.
So if I wanted to take something like an open source spreadsheet or something, that's something that's not already in Sugar, I can imagine, I could actually make it like an activity without, I mean, it'd have some boundaries to it. It wouldn't integrate very well, but at least I could get it on there, right?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, that's already been done. Numeric has got a wrapper around it. Actually, the Open Office team did Open Office for Kids for Sugar. And also, there's a JavaScript spreadsheet that was written for Sugar as well. So, but the idea that you can very, very quickly put a wrapper around any GNU Linux activity helps. Now, some applications are better suited for Sugar than others, in the sense that Sugar, I've been on a 30-year campaign to get rid of overlapping windows. So everything in Sugar is you know, single window at a time. And so a program like Inkscape works inside of Sugar really well, but the GIMP is a mess because the GIMP, you know, puts all these windows all over the screen. And so with the GIMP, you end up with all these windows stacked up, and it's not really very very easy to use inside of Sugar. So, you know, I think the GIMP is the exception these days. I think most modern GNU Linux desktop applications are sort of more self-contained, but something you have to look out for.
So the interface is actually still Fedora Linux underneath, and you're working with an X11 environment then, right?
Right. I mean, essentially you can think of what we're doing as an alternative desktop. So you can boot GNOME desktop or KDE or Sugar.
Ah, okay.
You know, that
gives me a good hierarchy.
Right.
Hey, so how does the SFC come into play here? You said something earlier about this being in a Software Freedom Conservancy project. How does that relate to Sugar Labs and what services do you get for them, and what was the responsibility for?
Well, you know, I've been from the very beginning of One Laptop Per Child, spending a lot of time talking with Eben Moglen to make sure that we really made Sugar and made everything in the laptop as free as possible. So he's been advising us on that from the very beginning. When I decided to spin Sugar out of One Laptop Per Child, I went to Eben and asked him, hey, look, You know, I'm thinking of doing this. You know, what do you advise? And he said, well, you know, it just happens that we have the sister project. You know, Eben runs the Software Freedom Law Association, but we have the sister project, the Software Freedom Conservancy. And it's essentially set up to do exactly this. It's to let a project worry about the code, worry about all the, you know, the software, and not worry about all the business side of things, all the lawyering side of things. They handle our books. They handle, you know, things like our trademark. All we have to do is write code and you know, get that code, get, you know, run a bug tracker, stuff like that. So it's a really nice way to run a project.
Yeah, I had to know that directly. It was a loaded question because I actually, I'm on the Squeak board. So we just ended up joining the SFC recently. So,
right,
yeah.
Right.
And I hope someday to get Brad Kuhn on the show too as well so we can talk more about that from that aspect. Where do you see Sugar then going in the future? Do you have like the short list of things that are really interesting and maybe the longer list of, you know, if you had a million or $1 trillion, you would do something differently?
Well, I mean, in the short term, we're marching towards 1.0. So we've been, you know, we sketched out very, very early on sort of the space that we wanted to work in. But, you know, it's hard work to get something that's, you know, robust and always works and works when, you know, somebody downloads it and tries to run it in VirtualBox and the like. You know, and anything you're trying to do with networks, well, the environments are so different in every place that, you know, there's just a lot of detail, a lot of corner cases. We're wrapping all that up. We're moving quite quickly into something that I think is really quite solid and quite usable. Not that Sugar isn't already usable. It's being used again by a couple million kids every day. And then there's sort of the longer term goals. I mean, one of the goals, again, is we're not trying to have a monopoly on learning. We want to take, you know, we got into this business because we want to give every child a great opportunity for learning because we want every child to help solve these problems the world has got. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to solve the problems, but maybe I can help kids have tools to solve problems themselves. That means that, you know, to the extent to which the Sugar ideas spill over to other projects is great. So you know, I'm more interested ultimately in the ideas behind Sugar than, you know, Sugar specifically. And so I'd love to see, for example, some of the Sugar ideas find their way into Android. There's a lot of Android out there, and there's going to be a lot more Android out there. So if Sugar can influence Android, particularly along the lines of things like making it easier for teachers and kids to roll their own activities, to, you know, to debug, again, engage in programming, not just using the applications are given, but making things and doing things, you know, that's a kind of influence that I think that the Sugar community can have on other projects and the broader community.
What, how is it, I'm just thinking now, how is it then, Sugar, is it already currently compatible or heading towards being compatible with multi-touch devices like the iPad and the other tablets that are coming out?
Well, I mean, we already have a Sugar running on a tablet. There are a couple of parts of the Sugar interface that don't really work very well with touch, and we're looking in. We've got a design team sort of rethinking a few things along those lines. But at the same time, you know, the GNOME desktop is looking very closely at touch and multi-touch. So rather than doing that on our own, we're trying to work upstream and work with that community to solve some of the problems we've got. Personally, you know, touch is great for certain things. I'm a big keyboard fan. Maybe it's because I'm old school, but nonetheless, touch is in a future. It's got to be because that's where the world seems to be wanting to go right now. So Sugar already hobbles along with touch, and it'll be beautiful with touch, hopefully within a release or two.
One of the things I always thought was sort of amusing is the eToys Squeak is already multi-touch compatible. You can actually have multiple cursors doing multiple things in Squeak already. So that was already cool that at least one of the activities that runs under Sugar already knows about that.
You know that that every instance of Sugar ships eToys.
Yes, I'm excited about that.
Yeah. So Sugar's been responsible for getting eToys in front of a couple of million kids as well.
Yep. So Alan Kay gets his vision of a small talk in everybody's hands coming up soon. Very nice. Very nice. Aaron, do you have any last questions? We're just about out of time. Do you have any questions, Aaron?
Well, I guess the I missed a little part of the discussion there, so hopefully you haven't already touched on this. But, you know, how do people get involved? I see on the website there's actually some really good videos that kind of demonstrate what Sugar's all about, which is great. I'm always a big video proponent. But if I want to get involved, if I'm either a developer or maybe not a developer, how do I get involved? Because it's certainly obviously a worthy cause.
So, we all hang out in irc.freenode.net, #Sugar, Sugar channel on IRC. And so for a developer, the easiest thing to do is just jump into the channel. For everybody else, the easiest thing to do, not as easy as it should be yet, but the easiest thing to do is to download Sugar on a Stick and try it, and then jump in and ask questions. We have a very active mailing list. Again, our IRC channel is open 24/7. And there are links to all this from our homepage and from our wiki. So sugarlabs.org or wiki.sugarlabs.org. And it's a very welcoming community. It's an interesting community in the sense that it's a mix, a real mix of teachers and developers and teachers who are developers. So it's not just a geek community, but it's actually a really broad and rich community. It's also very much a global community. We're in 40 different countries. Our developers are, absolutely global. We have pilot Sugar Lab operations in countries around the world. There's as much Spanish spoken on our IRC channels as English. If you're a Spanish speaker, that's no problem. And so jump in, join us.
Okay. And go ahead.
I was just saying, even if you're a Perl programmer. Perl hackers, welcome.
Okay. Good. So what license is Sugar using?
Almost all of Sugar is GPL. GPL v2 and some GPL v3. The Sugar activities that run on top of Sugar are a variety of free software licenses. And we've got a page in our wiki that describes which licenses are acceptable to the Sugar project. We're actually just taking the same list that is used by the Fedora community for the time being. People are welcome to write Sugar activities using proprietary code and proprietary licenses if they want. But we won't host them. We won't promote them. We only promote free software.
Right. So is there a particular reason why GPL versus some of the other licenses?
Well, I think that, when we first started this project, it was right in the middle of the transition from V2 to V3 with GPL. And a number of us were pretty active. I was not personally active, but a number of us are pretty active in that community, that debate. So I think it was really mostly a matter of the, what was the license that the particular, sort of core Sugar team was passionate about at the time. But I think the GPL is an appropriate license for what we're trying to do, in particular because it really encourages, a contribution model. I want anybody to do anything they want with Sugar on the one hand. On the other hand, I really want to build this community of people that feel some responsibility to contributing to the project as a whole. And I think the GPL suits that very well.
Well, I could talk with you, Walter, for another 2 hours on this subject. Maybe I'll invite you back sometime again when you go in more detail what's one of the activities and what people are doing with it in the time in the meanwhile. But and as an educator, as a trainer in my corporate life, I'm really fascinated by the idea of what it takes to get messages across to people and have that sort of interaction. And also as a tinkerer, because I know I learned software by staring at source code. I did not learn it from books. I learned it from looking at other people's code.
You and every other person who's ever written a line of code. That's how we learn it.
And I really love that notion that this is all open source for this. I can't learn how Excel works, but I can learn how GNUmeric works and things because it's tinkerable. And this sounds like an amazing activity. I'm glad you came along and devoted a good portion of your life to this and make it all happen. Are you sticking with the project for a while, do you think?
As long as I can. I mean, this is where my passion is, and I tend to follow my passion.
I really appreciate that, then. And thank you for taking time out of your busy day, then, to talk with us. And I'm sure this will introduce a lot of new people to what the Sugar Lab is all about, and get more teachers on board. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for the opportunity to spread the word.
Absolutely. So that was Walter Bender, our guest today, who is the sort of director of Sugar Labs, and speaking to us about a very important thing. Computers and education, very important these days. I mean, I can't imagine it'd be like not having like typewriters 20 years ago, or really essential to be able to start learning how to interact with things other than just handwriting. Aaron, what do you think so far?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was a great discussion. I think that we really are at a crossing point, so to speak, where the cost of the technology is coming down. And there are so many more opportunities right now for people to get in and learn things. I mean, there was a pretty big barrier back when I started. There was no internet. I mean, all these things. Sorry, I'm dating myself a little bit. But, you know, I mean, there was really a barrier there. And I just think it's great that in terms of education, at the very least, in terms of education, we're taking some of these barriers, we're breaking them down, and now kids can get involved and like you say, pick up the source code, learn how to do it. My oldest is just starting to do that, and I just think it's great. I think it's a great project and a great discussion.
I love how he said he was old school, but then, of course, he's creating the most modern innovation, teaching the youngest of our children how to do stuff. what an interesting crossover. The irony of that was just didn't pass me. So pretty very cool. And again, my experience with eToys from my Squeak involvement is this is really great that there's a platform now that people can download in a single download and even run on a stick, to be able to access things like Squeak Smalltalk and the Turtle program, which is essentially Logo, and all these other activities and collaboration. I'm pretty excited about this. I was excited about it when I first about the OLPC, but I said, well, not everybody's going to have an OLPC. It's only going to go to places where there's not already computers or mostly like that. So I'm really glad this is all happening. I've been really looking forward to this interview for a long time. Speaking of looking forward to interviews, I have some upcoming guests that I'm also looking forward to in a really big way. You can find out about these upcoming guests at twit.tv/floss. There's a link from there to the spreadsheet. We got Webcam Studio coming up next week. Patrick Ballou is going to talk to us about a virtual cam based on real physical streams, merging all down so it can send out as a webcam interface or something. And another one, too, Karsten Dominik's coming on to talk about Emacs org mode, which apparently is like Emacs on steroids, which is already on steroids. So it's on steroids squared. It's just going to be for organizing all of your information that you ever wanted, spreadsheets, to-do lists, all inside one Emacs buffer. It's always pretty fun when that happens. Ross Boucher, a Cappuccino web development framework, going to be pretty fun there. Alexander Leamy is going to talk to us about Plone, which is a long-time, big, heavily used content management system, I believe all in Python, maybe PHP, one of those P languages. John Newton and Luis Sala are going to talk to us about Alfresco, also a content management system of a different kind, so that'll be great. Darren Schreiber is also going to talk to us about the 2600 Hertz project, which is an end-to-end telephony application, all sorts of open source stuff related to that. We also have a bunch of other people on the short list. If you, again, go to the spreadsheet, you can figure out where people are coming from there. I get requests every once in a while for people to say, well, I see that there's this name way further down the list. I'd like them to come up faster and get on the show earlier. Well, I tell you, if it says waiting for me to contact and on this list way down towards the bottom, I'm not going to get to them for a while. If you want them to be moved up, here's how to make it happen. You contact them, let them know how cool Floss Weekly is, and then email me. My email address is merlin@stonehenge.com, so you can find it right there also on that same spreadsheet. But that's how people get moved up on that list, because otherwise I'll never get to them because I've got 30 people already waiting ahead of that. Where are you going to be coming up, Aaron? What's going on? How do people get a hold of you?
Well, you can always find me at thesourceshow.org or online if you want to follow me on Twitter or Facebook. I'm Aaron Newcomb on both of those, or you can just go to aaronnewcomb.com and see what I'm up to. Now that I moved out to California, I'll be doing a lot more episodes as soon as I get all my stuff unpacked. I've got boxes. You can't see them, but I've got boxes all around here that I've got to unpack still. So as soon as that happens, I'll be putting out more episodes of The Source very soon.
Very cool, very cool. And if you follow me on Twitter, speaking of Twitter, I'm Merlin, MERLYN on Twitter. I'm going to be in the LA area for the next couple of weeks. So if you're in that area, watch for my tweets and you'll see where I'm going to be in terms of restaurants or bars or I don't know, all sorts of places. I'm also thinking I'm going to hit a Perlmongers meeting or something coming up while I'm down there. I'm also checking in on Foursquare and Yelp all the time. I'm now mayor of like 15 places in Foursquare, and I'm the Duke of like 22 places in Yelp, and it's all bizarre. Meaningless points. I love it when we do meaningless points. Let's see. So I think I've covered just about everything. Any last words, Aaron?
No, I think that's it. Oh, if you happen to be in the San Francisco area for Oracle Open World, come check me out. I'll be in the pavilion there. So if you want to talk open source, we'll just have to kind of move off to the side. I'd be happy to do that, though. I know there's a lot of people coming, so look me up there as well.
Great, Aaron. Well, thanks for coming in on the show. Actually, you know, I didn't ask for you to actually be this co-host until yesterday. That's just how bad my timing and everything is. But thank you for coming in at the last minute. I really appreciate that.
Yeah, no problem. Always willing to jump in and help out.
And I know you'll be back for future shows. So with that in mind, let me tell our audience what I always tell my audience. Hello, everybody out there. Be sure to see me. We'll see you. There we go. Hey, I can't even do it anymore. It's not even a script. It proves it's unscripted. We'll see you next time on Floss Weekly.